The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Jenna Ellis Show, sponsored by Legacy Precious Metals. There has never been a better time to invest in precious metals. Visit LegacyPMInvestments.com. That's LegacyPMInvestments.com.
As a constitutional law attorney, former senior legal advisor and personal counsel to President Donald J. Trump, Jenna Ellis believes in the rule of law and the importance of integrity in our elections. And she's ready to tackle the big cultural and legal issues facing America. This is the Jenna Ellis Show. Here is your host, Jenna Ellis.
Legacy Precious Metals is the company that I trust to give you good and patient counsel for investing in your retirement. The Biden administration has caused a financial crisis, and they have no clue how to fix it. Oil prices have skyrocketed, and when oil prices go up, not only do your expenses go up, but the cost of transportation and shipping spikes, leading the prices of goods to rise. And we are already seeing record inflation. That's the last thing that we need. Our economy is in trouble, and you need to take steps to protect yourself. If all your money is tied up in stocks, bonds, and traditional markets, you may be vulnerable. So gold is one of the very best ways to protect your retirement. No matter what happens, you own your own gold. It's real, it's physical, and it's always been valuable since the dawn of time. Call Legacy Precious Metals today at 866-528-1903 or visit them online at LegacyPMInvestments.com. That's LegacyPMInvestments.com, where you can download the free investor's guide. You can also go to my Facebook page, Jenna Ellis. I am a public figure on Facebook. You need to start your retirement account even if you're in your 20s or 30s. There is always a great time to protect your retirement and invest, just like you want to protect your health over the long term. So go to Legacy Precious Metals at LegacyPMInvestments.com or call 866-528-1903. Experts have been warning that a food shortage could be coming even in the United States. They've been telling us this for months. John Boyd Jr., a fourth-generation farmer, told Fox News that, quote, we're going to see empty food shelves in the coming months. And this is why survival food is more important than ever. He's right. You need to create your stockpile of the best-selling Four Patriots survival food kits. This is not ordinary food. We're talking good for 25 years super survival food. This is hand-packed right in a family-owned facility here in the USA. The kits are compact, they're sturdy, they're water-resistant, and stack easily. But most importantly, they are survival food, and this is necessary as we have no idea what the next coming years may bring. So right now, you can go to 4patriots.com, that's the number 4patriots.com, and use code Jenna to get 10% off your very first purchase. Included in this three-month survival kit, you will get the year-long guarantee plus free shipping on orders over $97. They're called Four Patriots because a portion of every sale is donated to charities who support our veterans and their families. Just go to 4patriots.com. That's the number 4patriots.com. Use promo code Jenna to get 10% off. That's 4patriots.com, promo code Jenna. Start building your stockpile today. Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of the Jenna Ellis Show. I'm Jenna Ellis, and yesterday, Joe Biden said from the White House, announced that he is going to be giving 31 Abrams tanks to Ukraine. And this comes, of course, as so many Americans and conservatives are rightly concerned with all of the money and resources from America and, frankly, around the world that is being given to Ukraine. And why isn't our president concerned about our strategic objectives? He said in his speech that this will enable Ukraine to pursue its strategic objectives related to the war. My concern, of course, from a constitutional vantage point is always the same, that there is no declaration of war from Congress. There is nothing that requires us to participate in this. And yet it looks like Joe Biden is not only helping provoke World War III, but he's trying to provoke a wider global response. And there's just a lot of concerns here. So joining me today to break this down further, as well as a few other trending headlines for you, is my good friend Jack Posobiec, who of course is a senior editor at Human Events, as well as has his own show, which you really, really need to watch. It's one of my favorites, Human Events, that is powered by our good friends at Turning Point USA. So Jack, thanks so much for joining. And you know, you're a former military veteran, so you have a lot of experience in this kind of area. What are these tanks? Why does Ukraine need them? I mean, I've heard that there's not even going to be a delivery possibly for another year and a half. What is Joe Biden doing?
All right, Jenna, thanks so much for having me on. And that's right, over at Human Events Daily, we're breaking this down every day. Also at humanevents.com, we've also just published a tribute to one of our former columnists. So we are, by the way, we are still the same humanevents.com that's always been around. It was just sort of dormant for a couple of years there. Human Events was one of those brands that never really made the jump to digital the way that so many of the former brands did. But, you know, we did purchase all the archives. We purchased the whole back, all of the back issues, et cetera, for the magazine. And so we've published a tribute to one of our former longtime columnists who retired this week, and his name is Patrick J. Buchanan. And so Pat Buchanan has retired this week from his weekly column, and we've published a tribute to him. And I'm actually working behind the scenes on seeing if I can get a way for his entire complete archives to actually be restored to the website. It's funny, they're actually there on the site, but you have to Google to get them. So I just want to make a nice sort of one-stop shop and where you can go and say, you know, here's the first Pat Buchanan, you know, column, and here are some of the more, you know, controversial ones, and you can take a look at those. And here are some of the ones where he really laid out what his vision for America should be. And I really think that going into the new right, as we talk about that, the voice of Pat Buchanan is one that we should definitely be paying attention to.
Yeah, we really need to always learn from our history and some of these great writers of the past, and not just listen to current voices, even though obviously you're one of the most prominent conservative voices right now that people are paying attention to. But I'm glad that you're preserving that legacy and that history over at Human
Events. It's important to me. And I look at Human Events as, you know, we're the current stewards of Human Events, and eventually we'll pass it on to the next generation. And that's just kind of how it goes. And so it's not for us to change anything necessarily with the legacy. It's about preserving the legacy, making it relevant to today, which, and we'll get into that in a second, with Ukraine vis-a-vis these tanks, but then also passing it on and making sure that it adheres to those same values of, you know, in the past they would call it paleo conservatism, or, you know, but I think today they would call it America First.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, regardless of what the label is, and in fact, I've just been arguing kind of offline with some of my colleagues about the term Christian nationalism and how that term has evolved. It's kind of been weaponized, I think, by a lot of different angles in terms of how we define it, where people are arguing whether it's a more of a theocracy or more from a first principles approach.
And, you know, so, I've actually seen, and that's go down the entire rabbit hole, but you did bring it up.
Yes.
But I have seen... I have seen the debate
Ukraine,
on that, and this idea that, you know, America should be a theocracy and that we should have a prince ruling from Washington, D.C., a Christian prince ruling. And I see what they're doing with the argument, but I just don't think it will apply properly to American history. I just don't. And I say that as a Catholic.
Under our constitutional model, there is no theocracy. That's what Jefferson meant by a separation of church and state, not that the church and the state don't coexist as two spheres of government, but that the jurisdiction and authority of civil society versus the church and also the family are separate, just like there is a separation of powers between the legislative, the executive, and the judicial on the federal level.
Right,
and there's also federalism, right? So it all comes
down
to
jurisdiction. And that said, though, it is incumbent, I would say that it's incumbent on the conservative movement that if we are to be a conservative movement, that it is our job to argue for our principles through the political process where it applies. So, for example, whether it be obviously pro-life is, you know, sort of the most obvious recent victory, a 50-year march towards overturning Roe v. Wade, one singular mission that's been focused on by the conservative movement, particularly social conservatives. And I remember Republicans telling me, you know, when I first got involved in the movement, you know, way back when, that, oh, you know, we're not allowed to touch that one. That one's never going away. It's not going to happen. It's overcome by events. And I'm like, well, this is, you know, it came out in the 1970s, 73. So it's not exactly like some bedrock of America, Roe v. Wade, you know, stare decisis. Remember, it was, you know, Arlen Specter and questioning the judges or the justices when they would come up for the Supreme Court. And instead, we finally got a president who said, you know what? No, if you guys want this, I'm going to give it to you. And I'm going to appoint justices who did that. And that's what Trump did. And we got the three justices out of it, which really was providence. If you want to getting back into religion, this idea that you would get three appointments in the very first term. Of course, one of those, which, you know, credit to Mitch McConnell for keeping that seat open for President Trump, but he did do that. And so it really shows the power of the movement when you can work together. But also the question is, well, where did the morals of the conservative movement come from, right? So we're in trying to enact these morals and of course, you know, in concert with the idea of freedom. And so you could, sure, you could have the authoritarian, you know, Handmaid's Tale version of America if you went full on with it, like Joy Reid would say, or you can find that medium of sort of 1980s, 1970s almost America, where you do have the opening of the free market, you do have innovation, you do have entrepreneurism, but you also have the moral bedrock that's still there, that's had been left over from the 1950s, the 1940s, the Depression era, where we understood what we had to go through in order to make America strong once again, because we went through that fire, that testing fire of the Great Depression and World War II. And then I kind of say it's sort of like, you need 80s New York and 90s New York to make New York great, because 80s New York had the economy, but then they still had crime. Right. Crime was still rampant. And then 90s New York is when you get Rudy Giuliani to come in and say, you know, we are going to enforce line jumping and we are going to enforce broken windows and we are going to go after graffiti and we're going to make it so that you can walk through Central Park at night and you don't need, you know, an armed escort. We can make it so that you can ride the subway. And of course, we're seeing those same problems again because we've allowed the breakdown in social order. And this is why you have those two forces really in sometimes in tension, right? So because there is obviously a tension between freedom and order, freedom and safety. And that's good. That's the process that we want. We don't want all of one and we don't want all of the other.
Yeah, 100%. And this is, again, why history matters. And it matters to go back to the roots of our founding. And a lot of people who've participated in kind of this online Twitter debate around Christian nationalism and in even any other context of the Constitution will, you know, throw out a quote here or two from some of the founders and think that somehow is rock solid proof of their point. And they excise that and they proof text it out of context. And they don't take the full scope of American history. They don't look at the context of the Constitution. And it is very dangerous when people either say we are a totally godless society, we wouldn't have a bright line standard for morality, and all law that is enforcing someone's morality, how do we draw those bright line distinctions? But then on the flip side, people who are arguing for a theocracy, that the church should govern the state, and that somehow the modern day ecclesiastia, oh my gosh, let's excise that. Sorry, I can't even talk today.
Ecclesiastical.
The modern ecclesia in the church would then be in control of the state and would be telling the state what it has to do. That is not at all what the founders set up. And so I think we need to be really careful with this term Christian nationalism, because we are a Christian nation and we should be nationalist America first, but we need to be very careful how we define things. And that's a whole other show that I definitely want to get to and to parse out, because I think that's a really important topic from the
whole.
It is,
but I do think it's something where, you know, as you mentioned, my show is powered by Turning Point. So, you know, you've got Charlie, who's an evangelical, and then myself, who's a Catholic. And it's like, wait, I thought you guys were supposed to be arguing. But it's like you have the conservative evangelicals and then the traditional Catholics, where, you know, we're not always huge fans of what the Jesuit Pope Francis is doing and the things that he's saying. Much more in favor of, if you've seen any of Pope Benedict's writings that were posthumously released today, this week, talking about what is really going on inside the Vatican. And then realizing also that we both realize the same prescriptions for America and for what's wrong with America and how to get back to exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why it's so important to preserve these types of legacies like Pat Buchanan and others that we were talking about. I mean, I go back and read, some of the great conservative commentators from, the 80s and prior, and read the founders. I mean, read the Federalist Papers, read the Anti-Federalist Papers, know the ideology that underpins this and reject bad ideology, but also understand why we're advocating for the good. We don't have to reinvent conservatism. We're not Democrats that try to reimagine society and be totally disconnected from our past in our history. We need to actually move forward understanding where we came from and why, and how to actually create a more perfect union. But Joe Biden's not doing any of that. And so I do want to get your perspective.
So here's the general understanding of what Joe Biden's doing. And if you understand neoliberalism, if you understand Darren Beatty's formulation, which I think is fantastic, calling it the globalist American empire, you'll understand what Joe Biden is fighting for and what Donald Trump and the paleocons or the new right or the Pat Buchanan types, another Catholic, by the way, have always been arguing for. And it's this idea of, is the United States going to be this force of the world police? Are we going to be invade the world, invite the world, trade with the world, have these massive open markets with the Chinese Communist Party, set up these deals whereby in China becomes the global manufacturing hub, which of course it is. The United States and the West provide financial capital, financial IP, the intellectual property for products. iPhone, of course, is the ubiquitous example of this, and Apple in general, along with their Foxconn and the suicide nets that exist in China outside the factory. I've been to the Foxconn factory, by the way, in southern China. And the Middle East then, so we outsource our energy to the Middle East. And through all of this, you see the gutting of the American Midwest, the American South, particularly the reason why the Rust Belt is the Rust Belt. This is because of policy. Meanwhile, the United States military exists not to defend our country necessarily, but to defend American interests. Well, who defines American interests? Washington, D.C., the blob of the State Department. And so, are American interests defined by the interests of the people who are living within the United States and our safety, security, and prosperity? For example, I don't know. Let's just take a pick. The people living in the Rio Grande Valley, the people living in southern Arizona, the people living in New Mexico that are constantly essentially at war with the cartels, and the United States barely responds to it in any meaningful way? Or does the United States military exist to exert pressure on anyone who stands up to the globalist American empire? And so when you're seeing here, if you look at America as an empire, if you look at our country as having shifted into an empire somewhere along the line, a lot of people say this happened after World War II, where the United States sort of inherited the British Empire. And then there's another argument you can make about who's actually in charge of that, that dynamic. Is it Washington, or is it actually the City of London? But it's this idea, this sort of way of thinking. It's almost video game thinking in a sense. And you see a lot of video game thinking in Ukraine. Spawn tanks, like the tanks just appear and they're able to be used in the fight. Or like you're playing a game of Risk or Axis and Allies. Ah, the tanks are here and we can just use them all of a sudden. No, this is the real world. And you need to maintain those things. And you need logistics and you need supply lines and you need training. And so if those tanks are going to be maintained and they're American tanks that Ukraine has never used before, guess who's going to be maintaining them? It's going to be Americans. It's going to be whether or not, and I think General McCaffrey came out and said that it's going to be American defense contractors as opposed to Americans in uniform. But you can see the problems of what we call mission creep. And so eventually, this is going to be turned into another situation that, fortunately for us, though, as we analyze the situation, we don't need to imagine what it's going to look like if Washington, D.C. gets their way with this for the next 20 years, because we already have an example of that, and it's called Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. They are trying to turn Ukraine into Ukrainistan. And so even if Russia is able to take Kiev, if they're able to march all the way to the Polish border, if they're able to take Lviv, if they're able to take Odessa, the entirety of Ukraine, well, then there's even people right now in Washington, D.C. talking about, well, how do we arm the resistance? How do we keep Azov Battalion funded? How do we keep their supply lines going across from from Poland and across the Polish border and in Medyka and some of these other Polish cities that are right there on the border. Is it possible to take it? There's even people in Washington right now talking about, is it possible? Because remember, we have 40,000 American troops in Poland right now. They could easily, I mean, this area is not that large. They could easily cross the border. And I'm sure you could see this happening today or, you know, maybe a week from now or something like this, where it comes out. And NATO has decided that they are going to be establishing a green zone in Western Ukraine. And NATO forces will be marching into Ukraine there in the West to provide for the defense of these tanks, these maintenance facilities, these contractors there. Because, of course, what is Russia going to do the minute that we set up a maintenance facility or a logistics hub for these tanks? They're going to blast it. They're going to blast it off the face of the earth with one of their caliber cruise missiles, their naval forces, which are still very, very capable in the Black Sea. They're going to use all of that and they're going to bring it to bear. And so then how is NATO going to respond? Well, NATO might establish a safe zone. And so that means now NATO troops are in Ukraine. And so again, you see the mission creep. And that eventually we get involved in these situations like Afghanistan because we are trying to impose our will on the entire world, or I should say the globalist American empire is. And we eventually get into these problems without having any clear defined goal or a clearly defined idea of what success looks like, other than you don't support our values. We don't like your behavior. We want to change your behavior. We want to change your regime, which is, of course, what happened in 2014 in Ukraine with something called the Maidan Revolution, which was, of course, backed by a lot of the same people that are at the State Department right now, like Victoria Nuland. Victoria Nuland, the same one, by the way, when she was questioned by Marco Rubio about, does the United States have these, you know, bioweapon facilities? And she says, well, they're research facilities in Ukraine, research facilities. Not, they're clearly for research purposes, definitely not offensive. Yeah, if you like that, I got some bats to sell you in Wuhan. When you really look at the situation, when I look across the playing field right now, when I look across the horizon, I only see one person. And as of the time of this recording, he just posted this on True Social this morning, that we need to sue for peace, that the escalation in terms of all of this, and don't even get me into the optics of German tanks rolling onto Eastern Europe, because there's a lot of people in that part of the world who remember what happened the last time German tanks rolled across Eastern Europe. And it was some of the most brutal fighting, some of the most horrific violence the world has ever seen, certainly in the modern era. And the Eastern Front was just the killing fields. It was the bloodlands for years. The people who lived under the brutal Nazi occupation, whether in Poland or Belarus, parts of Ukraine, obviously some of the largest tank battles in the world, Battle of Kursk, which happened just outside Ukraine in Russia. But we need to understand the history here, but also that there's a huge difference between warfare today and warfare in World War II. And there's a tendency, I think, in Washington, D.C. and in London as well, to compare everything to World War II, as if there's never been any other history, nothing ever, Napoleon, don't worry about that. No, it was all World War II. Well, here's a problem. In World War II, people didn't have nuclear weapons, or as I like to call them, blow up the world weapons, because that's what you have to understand. That,
exactly.
Are we going to shoot down some of the nukes? Yeah, probably. But are you going to shoot down all of them? Do you know where all the Russian subs are right now? I don't know where they are. Jenna, do you know where they are right now? I don't know where they are. Guess what? Do they know where all of our nuclear tip Trident missiles on our submarines are right now? No, of course. We know they come out of Kings Bay, Georgia. We know they come out of Bremerton, Washington. But the reason that we have nuclear submarines on patrol every day, the same way they have nuclear submarines on patrol every day, is because it allows for second launch, second strike capability. And so even if we were to take out Moscow or they were to take out Washington, D.C., we would always, and they would always, maintain that second strike capability. And this is what's referred to. It's like we have to go back and remember all of the rules and the lessons of the Cold War. This is why you don't get into a direct conflict that always gets into an escalatory spiral. I don't know if you want to call it a downward spiral of escalation, because the escalation is certainly rising, and it is rising right now, because it always ends badly. And
I think a lot of the guy, people who are so concerned about all of this, are recognizing that kind of a dramatic escalation that Biden and his administration are intentionally fomenting. And a lot of the members of Congress, I mean, even a lot of Republicans, who just have this very very surfacey narrative to just say, oh, well, we support
it's video
Ukraine.
Game thinking. Oh, it's all video game thinking.
Put an emoji in our bio. But that kind of narrative is so false and faulty that this is just something, it's almost like, you know, we're giving them gifts as if it's Ukraine's birthday or something. I mean, and it's such a complete distortion
of the truth.
And so mainstream media is looking at this totally incorrectly.
Well, there was this this you know, like, highly educated idiot, and I call people highly educated idiots because that's most of what Washington, D.C. is. They have degrees all over the place, but they have no idea what they're doing. And one of them, who formerly was at Stratfor, which is one of these, you know, D.C. think tank types, was on Joe Rogan recently. His name is Peter Zeihan. And his line of reasoning went like this, because he was talking about the threat of nuclear war. And he said, well, the problem with Russia is that if we continue to supply Ukraine, which we've been doing from the start, then eventually that's the only way that Ukraine can stand up to Russia. Because, of course, Ukraine does not have the material capabilities while they're fighting a war to produce tanks. That's why they're coming to us for tanks now, because the tanks that they had, they're all gone. The tanks that remember the old Soviet equipment that we sent over and other European countries sent over? Guess what? That's all gone now, too. So now we have to send our new tanks, or, you know, like older versions of our new tanks, to them over, which is going to create so many issues. There's a reason that militaries use standardized equipment, by the way. And it gets this logistics nightmare is going to be a mess for them. But what Zeihan was saying was that if Russia feels as though they're on the verge of regime collapse, then that would push them towards nuclear war. I said, I agree. I think that's right. I think that that would be a desperation move. And I think, you know, a tactical nuke on one of the cities or something like that, or on a battalion, whatever it is, you know, that is definitely a situation that I could see playing out. I think that's a great point, Mr. Zeihan. But then he adds, and that's why we have to keep escalating with them. I said, whoa, 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 wait. You want to put them in that situation? Like, where's your line of reasoning here? You want to put them in a situation where you think they could use nuclear weapons, and your answer is that you want that to happen? I don't know if this is one of those, like, you know, Greta Thunberg depopulation Klaus Schwab kind of like conspiracy things, but, or it's a guy whose brain just doesn't work because he spent way too much time in Washington, D.C. with video game thinking and doesn't actually understand how any of these things work. And so I can really appreciate, you know, it's sort of like that bell curve meme. If you've seen the midwit memes that we post on Twitter sometimes, and it's like, you know, the guy with like the low IQ is like, they've got big bombs. And then the guy in the middle is like, you know, around like the 100, 115 IQ is like, well, if we, we follow the tenets of containment theory along international law, the guidelines for the tactical use of nuclear weapons, according to Russian doctrine, would therefore be follows if we were to escalate the, you know, and it's like, just goes on to gobbledygook. And then the guy at the high IQ is like, they've got big bombs. They've got nuclear weapons that could wipe out all of humanity. So maybe, just maybe, I don't know, we should try to find some kind of rapprochement with them rather than pissing them off.
Yeah, and that's exactly what President Trump posted on Truth Social today, basically saying we need to contain this right now. We need to make sure to de-escalate, and we need to stop this. Very easy to do. He said that, very easy to do. And he was, of course, the first president in a long time that didn't have this kind of this mentality and this hawkish mentality to just go in and spark all kinds of conflicts and, you know, and go into all of these different countries.
I get it, man. USA, America, these colors don't run. You know, I was a Navy officer, right? I get it. But that doesn't mean that we're stupid either.
Right. Well, it shouldn't mean that we're stupid. Hopefully. But I think that the Biden administration and even some of the rhino, more hawkish Republicans are stupid. So where does this ultimately lead? Because there are a lot of people that are saying, you know, we are pushing toward World War III. And I agree with you. I mean, this is not the same context as we were talking about, you know, back 100 years ago. This is really, really dangerous. And when we are provoking an escalation into Ukraine that obviously now Russia is going to have to respond to, what are the next steps? And what in your mind is Donald Trump saying, you know, this is very easy to do to solve this problem. What should the Republican contingent in Washington, D.C., who are the high IQ, be advising the Biden administration now?
Well, you know, it's very interesting because you also have this situation where if you look just at Ukraine, even from Ukrainian sources right now, half of the government of Ukraine just resigned because of a corruption investigation. By the way, the same type of corruption investigation that in 2019, Donald Trump, as president, was on the phone with who? Vladimir Zelensky, asking about corruption investigation. Now, of course, who was the family that he was asking about corruption with? Oh, that's right. Hunter Biden and the Biden family and the oligarchs that were making dirty deals through their gas company, Burisma. By the way, isn't it interesting that we're not allowed to talk about Burisma anymore? That's like nowhere in the news cycle because you have to defend Ukraine. You have to put up the flag, et cetera, et cetera. Russia is evil. But you say, wait a minute. What, a couple years ago, weren't we asking about Burisma and weren't we asking about the deals?
And we still don't have the truth of all of that either.
No, of course not. And you know, where are these emails coming from? Was he using classified information to, you know, you copy and paste some of these emails from the Biden laptop? And so, and by the way, one of the things I always point out, though, is that the Hunter Biden laptop, keep in mind, that's only the information that Hunter Biden himself saved. So what the Ukrainians and the Ukrainian intelligence services have on Hunter Biden is going to be 10 times worse than anything that he saved himself. And you have to imagine that the Russian intelligence services have everything that the Ukrainian intelligence services have, because where do you think Russia sends all their spies, right? Obviously, they're going to send them to Ukraine. So they know
they're
everything.
Probably not hiding their documents in their garage. So
I would hope not. I would hope not. That being said, I'll have to ask Vlad the next time he has us all over for Borscht and Borscht is Ukrainian, for Cholopki. I know that's Polish. But see, I can't even do it right. I can't even do it right. Where does this all go? It's very interesting to me, and it's certainly not lost on me, that the minute that we turn off the war on terror, the minute that we stop sending tanks and materiel to Iraq, the minute that we leave all of our equipment in Afghanistan, and all the contractors pull out and all the money comes out, suddenly we're sending tanks into Eurasia. Remember, we've always been at war with Eurasia. I mean, somebody write a book about that once. I can't quite put my finger. Now it's probably ringing a bell, but it's probably not a reference to anything. And we've always been at war with Eurasia. We have to send tanks. We have to send tanks. But then there's something that Biden's generals have been saying on the back end that I don't think everyone's picked up on, because it's not just that we are sending tanks and other countries are sending tanks. The United States is going around saying, and the Biden administration is saying, that if you send tanks or even donate tanks to Ukraine, your old tanks, we'll sell you brand new tanks from who? From Raytheon, from Lockheed Martin, from General Dynamics. So they've found a new way to turn this into money, because when the tanks are sent over, we're now selling our tanks to other NATO nations. By the way, the commander of Southcom just came out earlier this week, and she was kind of caught on hot mic, said this very quickly. She said, and by the way, I don't consider just the pro-American countries down in South America. She said, I'd be more than happy to talk with Cuba and Venezuela about this deal as well, because, of course, they have former Soviet equipment, some of the tanks that would be interoperable with the Ukrainian military. And so they're much easier to be integrated with the Ukrainian armed forces. They've been trained on them. So wait a minute. Walk yourself through that. Is she talking about actually sending brand new or at least highly advanced American armor and American technology to the Cubans and Venezuelans? This is how bad we've gotten in terms of all of this. So you've got that financial incentive, not to mention the much bigger financial incentive of the fact that the Russian leverage over Europe that President Trump talked about day in, day out. I was at the Helsinki summit with Trump and with Putin, the whole international deal. And it was Nord Stream 2. And Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2, Russia's leverage with Europe, they're tied to Europe. Where is that sitting right now? The bottom of the Baltic Sea. Somebody blew it up, but we're not allowed to ask who. We're not even allowed to investigate. And we're certainly not allowed to suggest that it was anyone other than Russia. Because, Jenna, I don't know about you, but whenever I go to war, I definitely blow up my own pipelines first, because that's what you do. That's very smart. Meanwhile, who is it that is reaping the benefits of that? Because, of course, we're in winter. It's a very cold winter in Europe. Who is sending the LNG to Europe now, all of Western Europe, because those pipelines were destroyed? Oh, it's the United States. Oh, the United States stands to be the winner. You know, I had an international relations professor years ago who, you know, the French saying, when you're in a murder investigation, cherchez la femme, you know, look for the woman. That he always said in international, if you ever want to understand international relations, I didn't understand this when I was an undergrad, but I always think of it now, and I use it as a heuristic, cherchez le pétrole, look for the petrol, look for the gas, look for the oil. And if you follow that, that's even more insightful than following the money. Because who's not selling gas and energy to Europe right now? The Russians. Who is? The Americans. Funny how that works.
Right. Well, Jack Posobiec, we are all out of time, and I really appreciate your insights here, and it'll be fascinating to follow all of this. So check out humanevents.com and Human Events Daily. Always really appreciate you stopping by the show. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jenna. God bless.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.